afternoon. It's a quarter after three, and we welcome you to the continuation of the public hearing portion of Senate Bill 7 as they engrossed. Yesterday, this bill has been referred to the Ways and Means from the Senate Committee on Revenue. Yesterday, in our public hearing portion, we had discussed the potential of some revenue neutrality, and Representative Hansen procured from the economist, Dick Yates, from the revenue office, the state revenue office, some information which he has provided to us. Before we go ahead and go into that, we did miss getting to one additional person who had signed up yesterday and an additional that had signed up for public testimony today. What I'd like to do is go ahead and, while we're waiting for Senator Adams, go ahead and take the testimony of Lynn McNamara from the League of Oregon Cities. Lynn had signed up yesterday, and we didn't get to her public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Lynn McNamara from the League of Oregon Cities. You really heard the history of this bill and the situation pretty clearly yesterday. I just want to comment briefly that I think you, Mr. Chairman, mentioned your big, whose budget is this in? It's a big number, obviously, for the state budget, at least in its present form. And for the 173 cities that participate in the public employee retirement system, and for whom virtually all have had an impact of House Bill 3349, say that it's really not in any of their budgets either. And if we look at this as a state and local finance system, with the state and the local government all providing services to the same taxpayer, this is an Oregon problem, and we are hoping for your help in resolving this issue. Senate Bill 7 includes really two distinct issues with the private pension and the state and local pension issues. The League has not taken a position on the private pension issue, but we do feel that we would appreciate the state's help in resolving this 3349 impact on city government. As you can see from the materials I handed out, that among all of the cities, there is a $108 million unfunded liability created just by House Bill 3349, and the impacts on payrolls in cities are all different. They average just under 1%, and for a small community, that hit can be very significant. And this is separate and distinct from all the other public employee retirement system issues that have been discussed this session. This is really kind of stands on its own, and it is a significant problem for communities. And for that reason, we support that state and local aspect of Senate Bill 7, which would end the taxation, end the remedies, and bring the taxation back to what it was before 1991. And happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Ms. McNamara. Are there questions of Ms. McNamara relative to House Bill 7 and her testimony specifically in favor of a repeal portion of House Bill 3349 in the 1995 session? Representative Nelson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not a list of all the corporate issues in the state.
Mr. Chair, Representative Messer, it is the cities that participate in the public employee retirement system, not every city. There are 240 incorporated cities. Not all of them participate in the program.
Any further questions with Ms. McNamara? Thank you very kindly for coming and attending. We invite Senator Brady Adams. We're honored to have you, President Adams, with us today. We have that figure bank there in case you'd like to use an acronym.
Oh.
Go ahead and get your money out.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll put that in just in case. I thought this was the way we were going to balance the budget.
It could, the way this is going.
has to be more than a quarter that goes in. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today and talk about Senate Bill 7. For many of us, this is actually an issue that we have addressed in a slightly different form, but basically the same in 1995. It is an issue that has a lot of history, very complicated, associated with it. But let me give it to you from my perspective. It's just an issue of fairness. As much as it is about tax policies, as much as it is about the fiscal responsibilities that you have to make, it's an issue of fairness. It's an issue about some Oregonians not having to pay taxes who look just exactly like other Oregonians that do have to pay taxes. Basically, what we have is we have a system where we have people that are in almost identical situations being treated differently. Now, I hear that in the situation is basically that on public retirees, on the state level, a certain portion of their PERS retirement, if they meet certain criteria, will not be taxed. That was an agreement we made, whether I liked the agreement or didn't like the agreement. That is an agreement that Oregon made. It needs to keep the agreement. Courts said we have to do it. We need to do that. The federal retirees then also need to not be taxed, because the court then said if you're going to do that for state PERS retirees, you got to do it for federal retirees. That's what the court said. Whether I like it or not, you ain't got to do it. But if you're a Teamster and you're driving a truck and you get the exact same type of pension income with the same characteristics, you got to pay tax. Now, some kind of expand that argument and say, well, if you're going to do it for private retirees, then why do we have to have other people pick it up? All I'm saying is you've got a class of people. And as long as you treat all of those class of people the same, then that's fair. When you don't treat all of those class of individuals the same, then that's not fair. So I see this as an issue of fairness. I see it also as an issue of fairness of how we went about trying to solve this problem in regards to local government. In effect, what we did is we just shifted the burden to local government. And that, to me, also is not fair. So that's what Senate Bill 7, from my perspective, is attempting to do. The way that it was structured was to minimize the impact in the 9901 budget, even though it still continues to have some impact in that period of time. And then secondly, what I tried to do was to look at what would happen in the 0103 budget. It was not very complicated, but an economic projection of what would happen in 0103. 0103, and it may change and will change over time, but based at the time that I brought this forward, indicated to me that we could afford to do this in the 0103 series. So that's where Senate Bill 7 came from and where the numbers came from my regards. I tried to hold Senate Bill 7 down on the cost to those that would be impacted. That's what I could do. I put income limits, all types of characteristics, again, trying to make sure we had the same class of individuals. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions for you.
Thank you very much, Senator. Are there questions of Senator Adams, the chief sponsor, one of the chief co-sponsors of the bill? Representative Leonard is recognized.
Senator Adams, I don't know if you recall now, but a 95 question I actually voted to the bridge. But the question I have now, in 99, is how can we afford to do this, given the, notwithstanding the argument, which I understand, obviously, because conceptually it makes sense. But I guess, it's like I've heard here a lot when I raise issues of fairness on any one of a number of given issues. Not everything is necessarily fairness. We're here to address issues that are unfair. We have a long way to go to get this session. So I guess when you accept that not everything is always fair, and you look at the facts are, I don't understand how we can afford to do this given the constraints that we're working under already.
Chair Lutler, Representative Leonard, let me try to approach it if I can. And we can't approach it, I guess, in an absolute sense, because you're talking about an 0103 budget period. But again, let me explain how I went about doing this. I asked the state economists to give me what they projected the 0103 budget would be, how much resources would be received. And then what I tried to do was to take the 9901 potential budget and then roll it up
into the 01033. That's probably the shakiest piece of this thing, because obviously we haven't settled the budget out for that period of time. In the process of doing that, I became personally convinced that we could fund this in the 0103. Now, would we have to do that with trade-offs? Yes, because it would take what is a relatively small surplus projected at that point in time and could commit it to this particular purpose. That left in the piece that we have in the 9901, which is basically correcting what I believe the unfair situation for local government. And I still continue to believe, I don't know what the current figures are, somebody...
$6,070,000 or...
No, I think that's the 0103.
$9,901.
There's some offsets to that in the 99.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
I guess it's 70, didn't we decide this was $78 million with the offsets?
That's significantly higher than what I had understood. I had understood the figure to be closer in the $20 to $30 million range.
We have an $18 million offset because of the savings in general funds to state agencies from the total revenue impact of $96 million. So I think we decided yesterday for $78 million, $99.01.
Can I ask the chair of the committee, did Dick Gates have a chance to testify?
He did.
Because when I talked with Dick, it was my understanding that that figure was closer to about 20, the figure 28 million takes a month.
Yeah,
perhaps we should invite Mr. Yates to come forward.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that was good. Okay. I didn't say that.
And that was the basis that I had, that it should be covered in the 99.
Yeah. There's some offset in the school fees.
Right.
In the school fees.
Hello. Now, the question that came up, maybe you could help me. When we had our conversation, we talked about what the 9901 net impact would be. And my recollection of it was that it was somewhere in the 25 to 30 plus million, 28, 30 million dollars.
You get there by assuming that the reduction in school costs is the general fund saving. And if you subtract the $65 million there, which is a reduction in school costs from the 96, and then you also subtract the 17 direct general fund, you're down in the main.
Referring to that, that's how I came to that. Okay. And I believe that that is doable within the 9901.
So, the school district generated the $65 million. Their revenues would increase by $75 million. They would be making an extra first payment and we'd reduce our K-12 allocation by that amount. And you come up then with the, how much then?
I don't remember the exact figure, but it was about $28 million.
If we drop off the $65 million from the school, we count $30,957,000.
But even at that, I mean, you know, $30 million is hard to squeeze in our discussion.
Sure, Butler, Russ, and Leonard, it's a challenge, no question. But I do believe it's still possible to do. And I guess I get back again to that fundamental issue. Obviously, there are many issues that deal with fairness, but this is probably one of the most blatantly unfair situations that I've seen, starting with how we treated the state first retirees in regards to the contract that we had, starting with forcing the federal retirees to have to sue on top of that, and then ending with treating private retirees as the exception. And I guess I get back to that fundamental thought that when it comes to fairness, I'm not sure government can afford to be this unfair in this situation.
If I could just follow up for one final question. I'm just wondering, as we balance decisions that we're making, do you feel strong enough about this issue that you would consider accelerating the $107 million payment to the federal retirees before the end of this biennium, which would be by June 30th, in which case we would have the money then to pay this cost and actually have some left over?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leonard, I still believe you can do that by doing it on July 1st. The main acceleration, there's a couple arguments you can make on the acceleration of the federal retirees on this. The strongest argument is the argument of fiscal impact and the savings that you have not having interest costs by carrying into the next biennium. literally the difference between June 30th and July 1st is one day's interest on that amount. We have already on the Senate side passed Senate Bill 259, which uses July 1st as the target date. I voted for that. We continue to support that.
My point is, it's more than just one day saving. There's $153 million over what we have projected to be over our ending fund balance at 2.1% or 2.2%. With that $153 million that's now scheduled to be refunded, if we made that payment, $107 million payment on June 30th, then that $153 million then could be dedicated for this purpose and others as well.
Mr. Leonard, and I think we have a difference of opinion in regards to the necessity of having to do that.
I understand that. I was just asking, you said you felt very strongly that this was unfair, and I'm asking you to feel so strong that this other, which I understand clearly your position, but do you feel as strong or less strong? Or
I feel very strongly on this, but I feel very strongly on this with the understanding from my perspective, which others may disagree with, that it's not necessary to take the kicker away from Oregon families, which is the only place that it kicks at this point in time, in order to resolve this issue. I believe that can be done with the existing resources that we have available to us, but I do respect that others would have a difference of opinion in regards to that.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Senator Trill had his hand up.
Yes. There are a number of, for me, problems with the Brady, and repealing the measure and exempting the state employees from paying taxes might be something that I would consider, but the adding of private retirees into this mix at this point is something that makes it very difficult for me because you know, I agree with you. One of your principles is you don't want to over encumber the next budget. And as I look at what's already happened, it's passed out of revenue committees that basically will have an impact upon the budget next time. With what we did with the corporate tax, which next biennium will have a substantial impact. There's just what we did with the capital gains tax, which will have a substantial impact. What we're doing here, if with these tax expenditures, if we're not over encumbered in the next budget, I'll be really surprised. And also, we have Mr. Sizemore. He's got an initiative measure out there. Good chance of passage. Another $1 billion of encumbering the budget. So that's one of my problems with this. The other problem is the fact that we really do need somebody to pay taxes. And you say, you know, there's a fairness issue involved, but there's also a fairness issue involved if people who have wealth and have income don't pay taxes on their income, while a lot of people who don't have much wealth and don't have much income get taxed to the hilt on theirs. And that's a fairness issue too. And so I feel that as well. I think a lot of these retirees, myself included, ought to be paying taxes because we have good income, we have good assets, and it's our responsibility to pay taxes on those things. So I want to get at that somewhere.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trove, that's the great thing about democracy. We do have differences of opinion, and I respect your difference of opinion because you come to those with very sincere and with logic that there is a risk in the next biennium, and I don't discount that. I have done the best I can to calculate that in putting this together. That's not a guarantee that they wouldn't create a difficulty. So I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
One question of Mr. Yates. Mr. Yates, we just did one calculation at $96,078,000. If you wanted to look at the fiscal analysis briefly, if you would, on $99,01,000. We subtracted the $65,121,000 of the schools, assuming that we would be assisting in the school offset out of the general fund, and that would assist the general fund back. What of the $17,939,000? Couldn't it also be reduced from that?
Definitely.
That was the most clear that we got.
So really, we're looking at the potential of it being as low as 13 million, actually, on the cost of this next biennium. Would that be your understanding?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure. I thought he said yesterday he wasn't sure about how much of the 65 million could be really attributable here, but there are other parts of the school income besides just the state's contribution to school income. There's federal monies or other kinds of things. And whether this 65 million, all of it can be attributed or not, I don't know. But I thought that was
initiated.
Mr. No, I did not make comments along those lines. I think what I said was it's clear to me that 17.9 million comes off as an offset. When you get to the 65 million, an economist doesn't have anything to say about it. It's a political decision. Whether you want to offset that in terms of getting to a state, not just a general fund, or even to a general fund net in some sense. But all of the 65 is clearly attributable to PERS assessment.
President Hanson.
Thank you. I really like what this says here in the first biennium. And I like the whole thrust on the public retirees. I think there's some real value in us doing that. We're looking at $13-14 million in terms of cost in this biennium. Then we have savings of $24 million for other funds for the state, and we get $25 million in savings for local government, and that's buying a lot of savings, not out of the general fund, but that's certainly an offset for our citizens and more goods and services that we can, and more things we can do with that money. I've got the same concern probably that the governor has and Representative Leonard has articulated in terms of the private portion as that moves on. And one of the things I'd propose would be if you lowered that cap below 50 million or below 50,000. And one example, on these charts that have been passed out, if you drop down to, then it proportionally it's kind of, it's kind of tricky, but if you drop all the way down to 8,000 as your cap, you'd save 50% of the revenue. That the bulk of the people that are paying have private pensions have pretty modest private pensions. So, but one of the things I think that would do, if the House could come out with a different number than the Senate and put this into a conference, it would also involve giving some time with representatives from the governor's office. I'm wondering if there's some way to structure this and say that I'd really hate to lose that the important part with the public retirees. I'd really hate to see that lost to a veto. And then I think by us lowering, coming up with some kind of a common figure on a lower cap than 50,000, we could revisit that every couple of years. I think pension income is going to be changing dramatically over the next decade. I think pensions at this point in time are really pretty modest. The bulk of them are low, modest taxpayers that would probably be very appropriate to get some tax relief here. Within a decade, I think we're going to see kind of the nature of pensions changing with them being much more substantial than they are now, and the appropriateness of that amount of tax relief, I think it's going to be changing virtually biennium to biennium. And this should give us some flexibility to do that.
Did you have a figure on mine, Representative Hanson?
The 8,000 pension income of 8,000 is exactly 50% of what 50,000. 50% of the revenue is involved in the $50,000 account.
So the pension income on private pensions of $8,000
would be a revenue impact of $47 million compared to a revenue impact of $93 million in 2001-2003.
Is it my understanding that you would say that people who had pension incomes of under $8,000 would not pay, and people who had pension incomes of more than that would pay? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not sure if we're talking about the first $8,000, or they would be paying on their whole. If somebody, I don't think it'd be fair if somebody had a pension of $9,000, they'd pay the full total, and somebody with $8,000 would be tax exempt.
Graduated after $8,000.
Nope. Well,
$8,000 would be the cutoff. You wouldn't pay anything up to $8,000 and graduated up. But who's paying? Who's paying if they have more? Are the federal people paying? You can't get them. Right? State people are paying, and just the privates are paying. Is that it?
Which is the same as they're doing now. Mm-hmm. Only we've got it. We don't have perfect equity now because we've got $50,000 gap.
And I think the concern that's being expressed in this process is at what level are we, as we went through the process yesterday, at what level do we have no special class of taxpayers?
Please remember that the state people are paying now, so long as this bill is in place, they are paying taxes on their income.
Well, they're paying in.
Now they are. Now you can exclude them from taxes and repeal that bill.
Yeah, and they've got a 9.8 increase to help build with that burden. So in effect, the state of Oregon is paying the state employees taxes for them.
They're paying the damages on
it. Currently, local government is also paying paying their local employee retirees income tax. Only they're not sharing in the $96 million of revenue. And that's another one of the inequities. I don't think we fixed all the inequities, but we're fixing some of them.
Are there further questions then of Mr. Yates or President Adams?
I don't know if the President has seen this, Mr. Chair, but the Governor has shown me the letter he sent to you. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have.
Okay, indicating that he's not supportive of the major.
He has told me that.
Representative
Hanson, well, one of the things, even though we would say the $8,000 level, even though we'd still be giving, we'd be decreasing revenue by $47 million, in the savings to the to government agencies, both the general fund, schools, other funds, and local government, there's $184 million savings. There's a revenue impact of $165 million for first year.
And 2001-2010.
So we actually have another governmental savings of $21 million that we would really be applying against the $47 million. So at that point, we're getting down to like probably a real net cost, a net cost to government to do it at the $8,000 level of $26 million if I may, which is not, which I hope times are good enough that we can record down then.
I don't want to open ourselves up necessarily for any more real issues relative to litigation, but I do think that what is being attempted here is an opportunity to try and develop this moving away from the Davis v. Michigan issue that was resolved in 1989 that brought us to a second class of taxpayers under the federal state PERS system. Michigan had, which Oregon substantially mirrored with the exception of a small modification to the amount that we gave as exclusion to federal employees up to a certain dollar amount, and then they were taxed wholly on their retirement beyond that point. And so the concern that I have is that without exposing ourselves to a great deal more testimony, really the concern is just to make sure that whatever we do would be equitable, and I think that certainly equity is reached when you consider a retirement income a lot closer to $50,000 than it would be at $8,000 relative to some of the retirement benefits that are presently being paid under the PERS or under federal retirement systems. And I speak from a position of having worked with federal retirees and state retirees, particularly those state retirees who retired a few years ago at rather substantial salaries under the UNIS program, fire and police UNIS program, and with high positions either in the state police, and the state police certainly, or federal retirees having retired with rather substantial federal benefits where they were in high positions, division managers or perhaps the Bureau of Land Management or other federal agencies, state managers and those kinds of things. When we start looking at, and of course it's all over the board, there's going to be the widow school teacher that's got a modest $10,000 or $12,000 pension perhaps too, together with some savings and those kinds of things. So I think the issue that President Adams was perhaps seeking at the $50,000 per individual per private retiree was to try and develop a position of equity. And I don't know that we come close enough to that. I don't feel comfortable enough from what I know of the pensioners that I know about, state, federal, and private, that I would feel comfortable that, for instance, in the little town I come from, maybe a Hines pension at a few thousand dollars a month, but there are some rather substantial pensions, I'm sure, that are paid in the microchip business and technics and so forth, and that's probably more of the, I come from a portion of the state where $2,000 a month is a vast sum of money that will keep you going for a long, long time. Where over here, maybe that isn't as much money. And I think Representative Hanson's right. As we come down the road further, we're going to see more and more of the higher pensions, and thus this concern for the special class of taxpayers and the dual class of taxpayers and the inequity that is inherent, which flies all in the face of Davis v. Michigan. And I believe that's where all of this comes from. And correct me if I'm wrong, President Adams, but I believe that's what Senate Bill 7 attempts to overcome. Senator Bill has recognized.
Sure. I think we have to remember who we are. We're a Ways and Means Subcommittee. We're not a Revenue Committee. I don't think we really have the expertise nor the time nor the ability to rework this bill. The bill is in front of us, I think, primarily for fiscal reasons. What do we want basically to send this on? Because it has a fiscal impact. That's our role here. And so I don't know how we, the representative suggests that maybe the bill should be reworked and we put a cap on it and so forth with regard to the private people. I'd like to know a lot more before we did that. If I were on a revenue committee, I'd sure want to study this thing in good detail. I'd like to know who's paying taxes now, and I'd like to get some legal advice from attorneys about the court cases and where they think we are now and so forth. If I were on a revenue committee, we'd spend some time on this, baby.
And it's very important. Thank you very much, Senator. We do recognize that this does come to us. Thank you for your admiration relative to the fiscal versus the weightier matter of the actual substantive portion of the bill. This bill does come from the Senate Committee on Revenue with a passage, a due pass with recommendations of the amendments that have been added unanimously from Senators Hartung, Starr, Wild, and Miller, with Senator Barr excused. And so we do have that as a recommendation. And the recommendation is at $50,000. Are there any other questions?
Mr. Senator
Lemon's recognized.
With President Adams, and I got a letter from the Governor Kitzhaber in the last sentence. I would be pleased to discuss with you at your convenience. Have you since debated today, and have you chance to discuss with the Governor on this issue?
Chair Butler, Senator Lynn, I have had numerous discussions with the Governor in regards to this issue. It is very clear to me that we have a difference of opinion in regards to whether this should pass. He has indicated to me very clearly that he does intend to veto the bill. My own personal sense, and I don't want to speak on his behalf, is that he still intends to do that. This letter was simply a confirmation of those discussions we've had before.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Additional questions of Senator President Brady Adams or Mr. Yates at this time?
What would your view be if through some form of legislative magic this bill was separated so we could have a straight up and down vote on and a straight up and down veto on the two separate issues of repealing the HB 3349 and the private pension extension?
Chair Butler, Representative Hanson, I considered that when I initially started it. I felt that there was linkage between the two. Frankly, I'm trying to discourage the governor from vetoing the bill, and I think that having both pieces in that helps at least to some degree. If that's not successful, then members will have to decide if they have priority bills left what they would want to do with that. But I would ask that this bill be considered in the way that it was presented to the Revenue Committee. If others want to do something, then they would have the right to be able to do it.
Thank you very much, Senator. Are there other questions of Senator President Brady Adams or Mr. Yates? Thank you very kindly. We're honored to have had your presence today. Thank you as well, Mr. Yates. We have signed up for additional testimony, Maria Kilmer from the Association of Oregon Counties. Maria, would you like to come forward, please?
Okay, maybe others who want to testify as well. That should be fine.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Maria Kelton. I did not sign up soon enough yesterday before the second sheet disappeared. I would have been on the list yesterday. I was here. I'm representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and I have attached to the testimony that is being handed out to you. I had an outline which Chair Butler has put up on the board, probably in better detail, sort of an outline of the cases leading up to today in terms of the state and federal retirees taxation issue. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties that the association supports the legislation which accomplishes the corrections or the equity that was discussed earlier in terms of restoring the state and local government employee pension taxation exemption for work performed before 1991 and ending the increased benefits that were a remedy for that taxation. That funding for those increased benefits, as you have heard, has created a financial strain on county budgets, and what I have attached on the second page is counties, the percent of payroll that House Bill 3349 increased their contribution, their employer contribution to PERS. Lake County, I believe, was the highest increase, with a 4.29% of their payroll being due to House Bill 3349, and it goes to various rates because each county has a different rate.
Mr. Kilmer, can you tell me how Lake County is so much?
I would defer to PERS in terms of why theirs is so much and somebody else's is lower in terms of the specifics.
I mean, I guess I can have an appreciation for a difference between 0.97 and 1.11, and even at the second highest, at nearly 2%, but 4.29 versus any of the rest of the figures on the page. We'll get back to that perhaps in a few moments. Thank you very much.
Sheriff would be tired.
Pardon me, sir?
The sheriff would be tired.
Sheriff, that would be the simple explanation, as I understand it, is that it has something to do with their demographics and who worked and what their benefits were before September of 91, and that's what makes for the difference. But again, I defer to PERS for the technical expertise on this.
Representative Hanson and I have both served in local government, and I stopped in to his courthouse one time, and compared to my local courthouse in Vail, Oregon, I said, my goodness gracious, Commissioner Hanson, how many people work here? And he said, not very many work here, but a lot get paychecks from here.
I'm sure I didn't say that.
The second column on that second page, the cost to county for House Bill 3349, I took the payroll that was reported by the actuary for each of the counties and increased it by the actuary's assumption that payroll's role would be increased by 4% each year, and then multiplied it times in Lake County's case, 4.29% to come up with those dollar figures. The one for the 2001 year, then the 2 years, 9901, and then the 30-year period over which the actuary estimated that if all of his assumptions were correct, that would pay off the cost of House Bill 3349, subject to change if every assumption isn't absolutely correct. But that was his best information. And I summarized that on the first page, that the counties, as of January 1, 1998, were charged in terms of money moving out of their employer accounts a little over $94.8 billion, which the actuary estimated would cover their costs at that point in time for House Bill 3349. They could either pay that in a lump sum or they could pay it in installments. And the installments are the pieces I was just talking about, which would require about $12.9 million during 99-01, assuming they start paying July of 99, because there are several payment plans. We appreciate your consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Are there questions at this time from members for Ms. Kellner from the Association of Oregon County.
Senator Phil's wondering if PERS is in need and whether they would agree with these figures.
I believe they have seen them. I don't know that they have checked them, but I did use the 4% payroll assumption and multiply times 3.
Okay, thank you very much. Very much, Ms. Kellner. Are there any other questions or comments relative, and I seem to get some of my cases in relation to the Vogel case was the last case. It looks like I spelled it wrong without an E on the end.
Unforgettable.
I'm sorry. And that's a 1998, and that's what basically was resolved in Senate Bill 259 and 260, which we have passed. We've come back and addressed the Vogel eviction, which was the State of Oregon case, to bring us back to the single class of taxpayer. Okay, are there any other questions amongst the committee before we prepare for a work session then? Does staff want to go ahead and wait for recommendation when we go into work session? Or I'd like to go ahead and call this a couple minute recess if I could. We'll just recess momentarily. and to a work session relative to Senate Bill 7A, the bill that's been referred from the Senate Committee on Revenue, and we'd like to go ahead and have Dallas Lyon from the Legislative Fiscal Office give us the recommendation.
Have it with you. We passed out yesterday the impact prepared by our office on Senate Bill 7A. Have it with you. I have a copy.
Yeah. Gene, yeah. You need one.
Or have one. Thanks.
It's the last page of the last page of the scene that you take us together. Get it. The fiscal impact on state agencies, notwithstanding the contributions that they would have to make to the Public Employees Retirement System on operations, yesterday to impact two agencies. The first, of course, is the Public Employees Retirement System, and most of that impact is in the upcoming biennium 99-01, and that's pretty much just one-time, limited duration work to kind of undo the HB 3349 stuff. And then the 0103, it would be business as usual again. The total amount here is not in their budget, nor is it in the governor's recommended budget. If the bill is passed into law, the Public Employees Retirement System can come with the encouraged to come, or would actually have to come to the emergency board with a plan and a formal budget for expenditure limitation to deal with this, and also with any other bills that impact the legislative session this year.
So the cost would not be a general fund cost.
These are not general fund costs.
It would be through the agency, and again, PERS is picking up the cost of this legislative boondoggle.
It would all be other funds, yes. The effect the positions are limited duration. They would only be there for the 99-01 session. The Department of Revenue, on the other hand, is a different story. The impact there would be ongoing because of the change in the income tax structure. The Department of Revenue's estimates are general funded, $70,000 cost. Now, these are preliminary for 99-01 and $137,000 for 0103. And these are permanent positions. They estimate 0.84. That's just a portion of the time. And they look at a full-time person to bring along a little bit before it will take effect on January 1st, 2000, to start making changes to forms and setting things up. And then for 0103, almost two full-time positions for that biennium. It would be an effect on employers, Public Employees Retirement System contributions. The numbers here differ somewhat from those that were prepared by legislative revenue. The numbers here were based on, without projecting inflation or floating employment rates or the like. But the covered payroll right now, covered payroll is about $5.7 billion per year. And the average cost of savings to employers would be system-wide about 1.02%. So employers look to save approximately $87.2 million for the upcoming biennium. The reason it's not the full biennium savings is because the savings do not accrue until it takes effect on January 1st.
It's just 18 months.
Representative Krupp is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Dallas. Dallas, have you done any calculations on the fact that we're going to essentially put $116 million in this biennium, which would normally go into the PERS system, back out here in the local economy of the state of Oregon? What kind of dynamic impact that would have in terms of any increased revenues from that money out there trickling down in the economy and producing jobs and income tax revenue? Any dynamic modeling like that involved in this?
No.
Okay. Is it reasonable to assume that $116 million in the local economy is
going to produce some additional revenue to the state at some point?
I think you could. I think you could do that on the basis of an input-output model, and economists certainly are capable of doing that. Normally, we look to the universities, the economists. The universities, Oregon State University, that's a group of economists which do excellent input-output modeling, and normally they look to the various places where the money would be spent. Types of industries and so forth, whether it's spent in part for groceries, in part for automobiles and so forth, and that would give you follow-up questions.
Well, I'm just concerned that, and I understand that legislative revenue only uses the static modeling. They do not use dynamic modeling, and I've had conversations with Mr. Yates about that direction they would like to move in, and I would like to see that to some extent. I know we can't reflect that here, but I think it's important to note for the record that in the case of what we talked about yesterday, other funds, local governments, if they're not spending that money on PERS, they're going to be spending on putting asphalt on the road, or hiring employees for mental health. All of those types of situations, that money is going to be used in the economy and will produce jobs. And it will flow back, a certain amount of that will flow back to the state in the form of some income tax revenue or fees or whatever that would come back to the state. So it would be important for us, I think, to remember that the numbers that we're showing here are an accurate reflection of one type of thinking. And there actually is an additional economic benefit to the state. So the term of this wording, but I think we all realize there would be some.
I think in our transportation economic development, that we're hearing in a different session of the day, in one of our earlier budgets, that dynamic modeling was briefly alluded to. I'm sorry that I can't remember whether it had something. I believe it was either the tourism or the arts dollars or some other of the local economy, but one of the figures that was used in one of those particular models was 2.8. I know that can go as few as one time, which is the dollar itself, and as many, which would be immediate end of savings, or as many as several times.
I was just going to say that the money doesn't stay idle now. Whoever has it is spending it, or if they're not, they're investing it. The money, wherever it is not just sitting there, possibly. It's being invested. You just say, maybe this will change that trick. Might change it a little bit, might make a little more money, but basically the people getting the first payment, they're living on it, they're spending it, it's there, or they're investing it. And the money that stays with the state is being invested all the time. The state treasurer has been pointed out. So it's not that the money's not earning itself on the market.
But I might say
it's stimulating the economy.
So that's some issue with you because this, in a sense, if we're talking about House Bill 3349, the 9.89 adjustment is to pay for taxes. So that goes to the state. In the form of an income tax payment, essentially. But you're very, very correct in terms of the normal person expenditure is what we are.
Even the taxes are continually spent and invested.
Right, we spend them and send them out there.
Representative,
actually, I've got a computer model on my computer in my office, and I ran all the numbers on this. And the problem was for the state. It was completely offset by the decrease in mineral oil prices.
Well, that I can accept.
Mineral oil hasn't dropped before again, huh?
Yeah.
Let's see. You'll be driving combine, and I'll be driving truck. You'll be doing a distance out of the Krupp mineral operation. Representative Krupp now moves the recommendations of our legislative fiscal officer. Let's go ahead and we've received it, and it's been moved that we accept the.
Does that mean we're accepting the bill and sending it to the committee? Would be
that recommendation is the recommendation that Representative Krupp is making. And we'll go ahead and take that by voice vote.
Aye.
Hanson?
No.
Trump?
Aye.
Trump?
No.
Lim?
Aye.
Chan?
Aye.
Butler?
Aye. Be noted for the record that Senate Bill 7 has passed with a due pass recommendation to the full Ways and Means Committee. We would like to go ahead and pass the one of the full Ways and Means. I'll carry that on behalf of the subcommittee. We would like Representative Krupp, if you would carry that, please, if you would, to the House. It would be appropriate for Senator Adams, I don't know if he carries the own bill.
He does occasionally.
Okay, we'll go ahead and put the, okay. And Representative Hanson, did you
have I'd like to explain my no vote. I'll be real brief.
Please.
This Senate bill does some very good things. It does some real good things for local government. It's, the piece on the public employees taxation is real good work, and it's very valuable, and I wish it had been split out so I could have supported that one element. The real objection I have to it is that we know there are some very good elements to this. By having it flow through this way, I doubt there's going to be any further discourse on it. It's going to be facing the governor's veto. The baby's going to be thrown out with the bath. If it were taken more time, either it came to us earlier in the session, or if there was an ability to move into a conference committee, or some way to involve the governor's office and maybe ease some of his fears, I think we still could have accomplished some good things. As it stands now, this bill will accomplish absolutely nothing. The other point, and that relates more to the debate that we had on the House floor yesterday, in which we talked about mortgaging the future, in terms of the tobacco tax settlement and the minority report on that, so we're using some of the tobacco tax settlement to fund some very needed things in education. We heard a great deal of talk about not mortgaging the future and keeping the state setting up some type of emergency fund so we can deal with economic downturns. And now today we're looking at this type of a bill that does just the exact same thing, not mortgaging the future but cutting off revenue in the future without any view of how we're going to be able to pay the bills in the biennium and afternoon.
Thank you for your comments, Senator Representative Hanson. The concern has been expressed by Senator Hanson that indicates that he has some concerns about the bill dying at this particular point. I don't know if that's absolutely the case. We do recognize that the letter was issued today with the governor's concern, and the governor invited Senator Adams to please come forward, and certainly Representative Krupp, as a co-sponsor of the bill, could come forward, and that could still yet be worked out because there have been amendments, and it could go to a conference committee. And so I don't know that I would characterize it as dead necessarily at this particular point. We do have just the recommendation from the committee that with a due pass to go to the back to the Senate at this particular point. My understanding has not been voted.
Sure. I don't know if the sponsors of the bill would like it to happen, but it still has to go through the House of Representatives. It could go through a revenue committee there, and these issues could be split apart. And I think the one issue of the repeal of the House bill and that part could possibly be considered on its own merit and might well pass. The other probably would pass the legislature, but probably wouldn't get by the governor's veto.
I think we need to work in a bipartisan fashion when it gets to the governor's office in the discussion stages, and that's where you would be in either instance. following the action of the four-way game.
The way I read it and what this bill would do would cut state spending by, or cut overall tax spending by $132 million. How have you factored in how that's going to affect the spending limit? Is that part of the calculation system?
About anything that goes above the, I believe we're in the spending limit, we're right around $70 million. Anything that gives us more money, we go above the spending limit. This bill is vetoed. It isn't part of that, but the $259 million is part of that. If that bill is vetoed, then it frees up $107 million, which would go in and could make for the supposed thing. It all depends on what the governor vetoes.
And certainly the date, the timing is a key issue, too.
I think it should have the opposite effect. If this bill passes and is not in this next biennium, it should actually be dropped below.
The biennium would have nothing to do with the spending limit in this session, and it isn't until the next biennium, I believe.
Wouldn't it have the effect of reducing $132 million in this, holding it under the cap in this one?
I think what Senator Tim is maybe referring to is what the governor's position may end up being relative to $259 million and $260 million on the Senate bill, because that could modify the amount of cash available to the carry over, which under spending limit for
the budget.
Mr. Chair, I might say that I'd be happy to speak with Senator Adams about the possibility of some amendments to this bill. I would say that either way, I suspect that will hasten any lawsuit provisions or any lawsuit that may occur through the class action lawsuit by private pensioners, which we do expect. The question is whether that lawsuit would be successful and the state would then be required to pay back in current or in future bieniums money to private retirees who may have won a successful litigation on the basis of tax fairness, on the basis of the special class of taxpayers issue.
Even passing these might not stop the suit.
It may not. I suspect that this bill, if it were signed into law, would probably pretty much stop it, but there's no guarantee about either, and that's a point well taken, Senator. So I, and again, that was really the basis of our, aside from just tax fairness issue, it was the idea of that what Oregon doesn't need is another lawsuit, another judgment against it, and several hundred million dollars being paid out in current biennials.
What we need is everybody paying taxes.
I agree, but I don't think it's fair that we go back to asking pre-91 retirees, break a deal that we had with them, and tell them, now you got to pay taxes. I don't think that's fair either. But I agree with you. Either we're going to pay all, we're all going to pay taxes, or we're not.
Thank you very much, Colin. We'll go ahead and end the turn. I think we have a slate tomorrow for the bill to hear. We'll end the evening until tomorrow.
Oh, that's fine.
Thank you very much.